Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, just want to tell you that our phenomenal, incredible, unique, world-class Jordan Henderson 10 Years a Red documentary is now available as a podcast. 3 episodes. Episode 1 is going to be available to listen to in your native podcast and app across all good podcasting services for free. That's going to be charting his rise up the ranks at Sunderland leading up to his move to the mighty Reds. Episodes 2 and 3 covering his rise at the Reds, playing right midfield, fighting against all the odds to become an established Liverpool player. And episode 3, yeah, the good stuff, the stuff where he shuffles his legs and lifts loads of silverware. He's absolutely brilliant footballer.
The dressing room is a much better place. People like him, and
he's a wonderful footballer.
My captain.
Episodes 2 and 3 streaming exclusively on Red Men Plus. Head over to redmenplus.com. If you've checked it out in video form and you want to get it on the go, you can get it. If you've never experienced it before, get the incredible Jordan Henderson Hendo 10 Years of Red documentary in your ears right now. Hello everyone, it is the Red Men Podcast. I am Paul Machin, Steve Hall, Chris Page at the Dream Team, back in the studio together.
Back while. Again.
It's been a while.
Okay, it's been a good old...
You got off a lot.
We're in the studio. The season is about to begin proper at the weekend. We're going to look back on last weekend's double game action. We're going to look ahead to this weekend. We're going to be doing our season predictions because it's YouTube. The season's about to begin. Let's make huge rods for our back and potential memeable, streamable content where we get this hideously wrong, as always.
You know, if you're watching this on Twitter, what would you tell them to do?
It's all right, I'm coming to that.
You've got a minute.
I've got, what?
It's time's up.
Yeah. It is now that you're fucking... Now. See you on Twitter. Enjoy us on YouTube. Bye.
You would never get into that.
You lie.
Not
you
a chance.
You lie. You
sit in front of your eyes. You lie. Of little faith.
You liar.
Thank you very much. Kickoff question comes from me this week. In honour of Steve getting absolutely slaughtered by a gang of weirdos on social media. If you could give Jordan Henderson any rating in a match, Steve, what would it be?
Whatever Jordan Henderson paid me to give him.
Yeah.
Or FSG paid me to
give
him.
I genuinely love that.
What he told me I have to give him so that he will then speak to us in an interview.
Yeah.
All of the above.
Honestly, if that was the case, I wouldn't have been chasing... I've been chasing Jordan Henderson for a year.
Give me a 10.
I've been chasing Jordan Henderson for an interview for at least the last 12 months, and it's not happened. I wish that was the case. But then again, obviously, maybe... they're not paying me, apparently. They're definitely paying you.
How rich I look.
So... just to clarify this, because I saw you doing the right thing and reacting to this, was... I've got the ratings board up there. So you gave him a 9 in the Charity Shield.
Yes.
And that apparently means that there's some sort of deep-seated, deep-rooted problem with you and us. And actually, I saw the Anfield rap being chucked into this as well, because we're all on...
Apparently, yeah, we've got to be nice to Jordan Henderson and to get access to Liverpool, which is nice. And also, a few people accused me of being racist and said that if he wasn't white, I'd have given him a lower rating. Forgetting that the two people that I give the highest ratings to in the game aren't white.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I think it's funny. I took offence to that one, so that's why I answered the critics back.
Yeah.
I can be accused of being like, oh, puppers and that. I can't be accused of being racist. Yeah. So I wasn't having that. Yeah. And that's kind of why I answered back in the first place. That's nonsense. I thought Jordan Henderson played well. Other people didn't. It's like, sound. The amount of people who get annoyed at the arbitrary number that we stick on a thing and put it on there, bath blows my
Chris's
mind.
Face. Chris, who has hosted the play rating show almost consistently for the last decade.
It's mad, isn't it, Chris? And I was like, they were like, oh, but you didn't, you know, if you went back and watched the game, you might, and you know what, maybe. And I did say, that's recorded 20 minutes after the game, and it's instant. And then what we do here, we then record a final word, Joe, a day or two later, where people have gone back and you've watched the game again and you've got...
And we all thought the same thing, by the way. And just to back up you on this, I was listening when you were doing the show. You asked for the percentage of man of the match. You wanted Thiago to be the second, you know, man of the match, as it were, for Liverpool. Henderson won the public vote.
Yeah, so
the second
man
of the match. Over what they put, which was Thiago.
So
it's not just one person who voted him really high. Actually, like, the vast majority of people thought he was the second best player in the game.
He had a really good game.
He did give the ball away, but I was like, I even said
Thiago,
that.
Thiago gives the ball away.
Probably a little bit more than I remembered during the ratings, but I thought without the ball, he was phenomenal. And that's why I gave him the. And again, it's an arbitrary number. And it was like, well, if that was a 9, then what would you have given him in this game? I was like, oh my, I do not care. Like, let it go. Yeah. It is not that important. I'm a bald guy on the internet. Like, my opinion does not matter that much. Chill your beans.
Yeah, I know. Well, I said, mercifully, Naby Keita did playing the game, because it is not possible to give Naby Keita a mark out of 10 on the internet, because there is no right answer. Because if you mark him, and I'm using inverted commas, too high, then you'll get people say, oh, you're blind and you're deluded. And if you mark it too low, everyone says you're racist. Because a Naby Keita is the most divisive footballer in pretty much in the history of Liverpool football.
Because?
Coming up on the rails behind him, by the way, is Curtis Jones.
Yeah.
Who's another one like that. But, yeah.
Naby's right, because he's inconsistent. Like, what I think about Naby is like, there'll be days where he's a 10, and then there'll be days where he's a 5. And if you give him a 5, it doesn't mean you think he's crap. It means you think he was crap in that game. I think I give Trent a 5 in, might be in the European Cup final, or a big game at the end of towards last season. I think Trent Alexander-Arnold's the best right-back in the world. He had a bad game. I thought Jordan Henderson played well. And I've said constantly on this show, it's Malik, in my opinion, Liverpool's best midfield should be Fab, Thiago, Naby. That's what it should be. But Naby hasn't forced Jordan Henderson out, and Jordan Henderson's kept himself
Jordan
in
Henderson's
there.
Class. Yeah. And also, let's be perfectly clear on this. Because look, I don't like really like giving too much oxygen because it feeds into like the ego of it all. Like, you know, like it makes it legitimize it all.
I can't be going racist.
You're going to call that out. But moreover, Liverpool played a brilliant game of football against a big rival. They won, and they got to celebrate and lift a big 50p. And everyone partied and danced as you were lipping on the pitch. If you're not given slightly inflated marks in a game like that, and they might not be slightly inflated, but the point is, I would be really upset if you were like, well, actually, technically, due to the Opta data, I'm only giving everyone like a 6.5 because it's only, fuck off. You know what I mean? If someone had a good game and you're feeling good vibes about them, 8s, 9s, 10s, as far as I'm concerned.
It's all about the vibes.
Yeah, exactly. Right, okay, we're going to talk more about the Charity Shield in a little bit. We have got a prize draw to do. Before then, if you're a Club Legend subscriber over on Red Men Plus, you have been entered into this month's competition, and it was to win this wondrous piece of Liverpool memorabilia. It is a UEFA Cup Final Dortmund 2001 Liverpool shirt signed by none other than Emil Heskey and Jamie Carragher as well. Yes, if you were joined up in the last month or prior to that at any point as a Club Legend subscriber, your name is on the Wheel of Names, which I'm going to casually find here. You right?
Steve just poked his head around.
Visual gags rave supreme on YouTube.
Okay.
We're going to do the draw right now, and then we're going to reveal next month's prize, which is an absolute belter as well. Right, so I'm going to click at some point tell me that before this, Tom. Fuck's sake. Chris's arms are about to fall off. Right, sounds okay. Well, we're going to wait till the laptop turns back on and fill. Do you want to show the next month's prize while we're waiting for this to turn back on?
We had a system, Paul.
I know.
We had a system.
Oh, yeah.
Why has this got like a corkboard interior.
Because it's posher.
Oh, cheaper, yeah. So this is
posher, how we say cheaper.
No, it was posher.
It is. It looks well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So, yeah, that is next month's prize. It is a signed European Cup 1977 Liverpool home shirt signed by Phil Thompson. Right, okay, so we've got the Wheel of Names. We're going
to
click.
Back to the other one.
Now, ready? Hey, Steve Howley is a winner of a human being. He's going to be taking home the Emil Heskey, Jamie Carragher signed Liverpool 2001 home shirt.
I always like when another Steve H does well. It's like a pride thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Good on him. Congratulations.
Rising tide floats all boats.
Yeah, exactly. We all get a boost off that.
Congratulations to Steve Howley. Yeah, we'll get that sent out to you as soon as possible.
Steve Howley's me with a moustache on.
Yeah, just like a scribbled on fringe. sound boss, well done mate, that's great. If you want to get involved and you want to be entered into these incredible prize draws, then head to redmenplus.com and join as a Club Legend subscriber, or if you're an existing Club Captain subscriber, upgrade your subscription by going to your account page, and yeah, you'll be in with a chance next month of winning Phil Thompson. We've got
Phil Thompson. Here you go, here's a Phil Thompson.
A chance, I said.
if you own Phil Thompson, what would you have him doing?
Apparently he's going to give him away.
Yeah. You're going to give him away because you apparently own him.
Well, no, I mean, I would have him in the studio on the podcast.
Instead of?
As a prize.
That's me, isn't it? It's always me. Third wheel whore.
Hendo, 10 Years of Red, a three-part podcast series looking back at the amazing career of Liverpool captain Jordan Henderson, featuring the likes of Jurgen Klopp.
He's brilliant in small spaces. He's absolutely brilliant footballer. So that's, yeah, why we play him in such decisive positions like six and other things.
Steven Gerrard.
Look, I think when you sign for Liverpool and you come out of your city, i.e. Sunderland, at such a young age, you're going to have your moments and you're going to have times where you need some support and it's not really working out.
Sir Kenny Dalglish.
For me to present it to Jordan was a huge honour for me. To give a special trophy to a special guy, that a special football club is, it doesn't get much better, does it?
Jamie Carragher.
What you noticed straight away was sort of the personality, the character of the player as well, was pretty good and pretty special. So you knew he'd have half a chance because of that.
And Trent Alexander-Arnold.
When I first went and trained with him, like, he blew me away how good he was technically. And like, I was kind of like, whoa, I didn't realise he could play like that or he could do that.
Hendo, 10 Years of Red. The amazing three-part podcast series, available now on Red Men Plus.
Yes, welcome back. Right, let's dive into it. Community Shield was at the weekend. Liverpool lifted the big 50p. We're all made up with it. I just want to talk briefly about Adrian, actually, because he was, Chris, the guy I think that was most likely in everyone's heads to be the reason why Liverpool weren't going to win that pre-match.
Yeah, I think most people were being a bit harsh on his performance, to be honest with you. I think they were being harsh on what happened for the goal as well. I think, you know, obviously so many people did the final word show yesterday. A lot of blame being put at Adrian's feet, hands, whatever. I just didn't see it. I just saw that Foden got his foot on the ball at the exact same time that Adrian got his hands there, so for me, it was just unlucky that it kind of bounced through his legs and stuff. I think when you think about the team plays, my big concern going into the game was the fact that Liverpool were going to drop off an extra 10 yards with Adrian and goal, and that didn't happen. I thought we held the line really, really well. You know, even that one where, was it Mahrez who went through on goal and shot from distance, where Van Dijk knew he was offside, but he shoots from 25 yards because Van Dijk's closing him down, or 20 yards anyway, and Adrian turns it over the bar anyway. You know, he had that one where he gets down with his feet and makes a good save early doors. I just thought it was a solid performance by a number three goalkeeper, and sometimes you can just overanalyse things. Liverpool won the game with our third-choice goalkeeper. They had their first-choice team out, including goalkeeper. He made a few good saves, and we walk away knowing that Kelleher and Alisson are still better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's exactly that. You know, he's a third-choice goalie, and I agree with the sentiment of, if you were looking at, if it seemed likely both teams were going to go strong, and that was the obvious one, because it's no slight on Adrian. he's the third choice goalie. I thought he played well. And because under this notion of, and it goes back to our player ratings thing yesterday, because I can see you wincing already, in so much as if you're going to rate players by on the Messi scale, you know, like, yes, Adrian's not. And even if you, by Alisson's standards, that wasn't a brilliant goalkeeping performance. But by Adrian's standards, by the expectation, he made some important saves. He didn't fuck about with it, which is his biggest weakness as a Liverpool goalie, is he dwells on the ball too much. There's times when his kicking was crap, because his kicking's not as good as the other goalies we've got. And there's times when he just booted it into touch, because because that was the most sensible thing to do. That was as good a third choice goalkeeper performance as you're going to get when you're playing the other best team in the world.
Yeah, I'd agree with the last part. I thought he was ropey. I think it was a typical Adrian performance. He can't kick. He's really good at instinctive saves. And when he has to think about stuff, he's not very good at it. So that one that he that's a decision he makes. A reaction, say, like the Mahrez one or the ones at his feet, they're reactions. He's really good at those. You see that when you go to the game in the training beforehand, when he's warming up, even as a third choice goalie, his reactions are really good. Yeah. That's his skill. And that's fine, because as a third choice goalie, you know what, just save it and all the other stuff we'll work around. We'll work around the fact that you can't kick. And that, you know, your decision making can be slow. And with you, I was happy with him to boot it out the foot a couple of times if that needs must. I don't think he did well on the goal. I would disagree, because I think he goaled.
I don't think I said did well.
No, sorry. You, sorry. I don't think he was unlucky. I think his technique was poor. I think he was trying to scoop that ball into his chest. And I don't think that's ever, I don't think any goalie's ever taught that. I say you're taught to dive on it like it's a bomb. Or like it's a grenade, and you just land on it. And I think that's where I took the discussion.
No,
this is the point, is that he's Liverpool's third choice goalie, playing against the best team in the country at the moment, or well, they are the champion, one of the best teams in Europe. Like, that's about what you're going to get. You're probably going to get an error, and you're just hoping when that one error comes, it doesn't cost you. And to be fair, I think the linesman's flag being up didn't help. Because Trent's kind of looking the other way. He's literally looking at the linesman by the time that ball goes in. I think that's a bit of a lesson to learn, like, just carry on regardless. But, like, I don't think Ederson was that great, to be honest. I thought the save from Nunez is really good, and he has a couple where he comes
out. Where it hits him in the face.
But that's a good save.
Yeah.
And the other ones when there's a couple of crosses that he just gets a touch on to stop Luis Diaz scoring. But, like, his kicker was rubbish. There was that one pass with Dan in the middle, which was out of this world good. But he kept kicking it out as well. Like, he wasn't great.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a massive difference on the day between the two keepers, which is credit to Adrian, because, like you say, he's fair choice.
Exactly. My overriding point on this is that it was pleasing to me, because he gets an undue amount of stick.
Yeah.
Because we can't let things go. And recency bias. And he had that run in the title winning season at the start of the season. And one of the reasons Liverpool win the league is because Adrian bails us out the shit, comes in out the cold from nowhere, wins us the Super Cup from the penalty shootout, and then goes on a good solid running goal for us till Alisson gets back. And since then, he's had more games where you're like, oh God. Than he's had.
Like, people can't let the Atletico come with a game.
Exactly.
That's the one
and Chelsea in the FA Cup as well.
Even the Aston Villa. And I get it, like, he is a bit rubbish, but also he's fair choice. Like, we saw Man City's second choice goalie play against us in the FA Cup semi final last year, and he was garbage.
Yeah.
Listen, it's hard, isn't it, to have a good second choice. Never mind a good third choice.
Yeah. The biggest talking point, of course, that we need to talk about the game is that Erling Haaland is now called Scandi Carroll, which I just think is one of the greatest wins of the internet.
We saw the bad of footy Twitter when they were giving me all that shit. The good of footy Twitter is some of these names. That's hilarious. Like, it really was. Me and Chris were pissing ourselves.
We saw it on the instant match reaction. We just put it into Twitter, search term, and just started reading through them all with all the images and stuff. And it was glorious. And it just kept going and going and going. This is 25 minutes after the full-time whistle, like.
Darwin Nunez holding the fish with his head on it and all that kind of
brilliant stuff.
Like, just wonderful, wonderful stuff. And look, what I'd say to people is enjoy it. Enjoy it now.
He's going to score a lot of
goals. He's going to score loads and loads and loads of goals, because that's the thing about it. It was wonderful. That one, like, encapsulated what we needed from the summer because of how it had been built up. And Jamie Carragher kind of was put that tweet up, didn't he? Which starts off quite funny but ends a little bit like... It's quite serious of people making compilations, fucking clowns making compilations of really good footballers doing things wrong. But that has been the tiresome back and forth banter of the summer. As a Liverpool fan, though, I was a bit worried about this whole Haaland versus Nunez thing, because I do think Haaland is, there's a reason why Haaland's being touted as the best player in the world, or the he's up there with Mbappe as the heirs to the throne of the greatest players on the planet, and people aren't talking about Nunes that, because Nunes hasn't got the track record yet to back that up. But the way we managed it, the way it was great, and him missing that thing at the end, like I was in the ground and we were just chanting Nunes' name and he misses, and it's just, oh, it was just, the whole thing was delicious. It was everything I needed, because it could have gone the opposite and we'd be sat here living in the Darwin Nunes meme era.
Darwin Punes would have been. That's what it would have been, wouldn't it?
Like, the thing is, though, like, we were saying it on the day, where we enjoy it while it lasts, because it's not going to last forever. So we've had stick off other fans, we'll give it back, sound, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? He's going to be brilliant. We recognise that. But I think now there's now more confidence that our lad's going to be brilliant as well. Mm-hmm. That's where it comes. That, for me, it's irrelevant how he performed. It's how our lad performed up against him.
Yeah.
And, you know, when all the talk pre-match is Haaland, and all the talk post-match is Nunes.
Yeah.
And that's what you need as a Liverpool player when you're new to the club. You know, it was interesting reading some quotes from Nunes this week about how Salah had helped him settle in and had spoken to him and stuff like that, because he was finding it difficult. He felt his first touch was off and all that type of stuff. And to see the Liverpool players rally around the new lad, of course that's going to happen. Of course we know it's going to happen with the lads that we've got, but that one of them's talking about it is another. It just reaffirms your position of how good these lads are in the squad, how much they want to win and how much they want to succeed as a team.
I can put it in the agenda, but actually I do want to talk about this. I've been thinking about the Mo Salah thing and how Mane leaving and him being given that contract, you know, because there's legitimately an argument to have been made over the last 2 years. We've all back and forth, like, if you'd only could keep one, who would it be? And the obvious answer was always really going to be Mo Salah, of course, but it didn't mean there wasn't debate over it. But I did think about his seniority in the squad, and what this does is that effectively says, if he, you know, he's now got the option to, he'll have had all of his best years at Liverpool if he sees this contract out, and he might yet go deeper and do another one beyond that. He could finish his career at Liverpool. He's going to be known now as a Liverpool player, like, for all time. That's what he's done, and being able to be a bit more of that, like, leadership figure. The Mane thing going, because I wonder sometimes whether they've done each other's heads in a little bit with both wanting to be the absolute main man. And it's, and also we forget sometimes, of course, that Salah's the newest of that front three. You know, Firmino was in first, Mane follows, then it's Salah. Now it's like saying, here you go, and he gets to be just this a more influential figure, I think, in Liverpool. He gets to fit in like Virgil van Dijk is. He's the old head and he's still the best player in the team. I just like, it got me thinking that. I like that as an attitude.
I saw Nunes' post-match interview, obviously the translator, and he basically says, you know, I was in training and it wasn't going well for me, and then I had a chat with Mo Salah. And then it got me thinking, like, Darwin Nunes grew up watching, like, Mo Salah must be an idol of his. Mm. We forget that, like, he's that young, and Mo Salah's been here for that long now, and it's been one of the best players in the world since, what, 5 years now? Mm-hmm. Like you would. Darwin Nunes would have been a teenager watching Mo Salah, and then all of a sudden he's playing with him. You're right, he has got that air of seniority. I saw, you know, Mo Salah with the captain's armband on when he tagged Jordan in this on Insta as a little joke, like, you know, I'm the captain now, that kind of thing. He's a senior player now. And I've never thought what you said, that he was the last in, so I wonder how that played. Now he's the main man. He always has been the main man, but now he's the main man of the front three, because whoever plays alongside him is, I mean, Firmino aside, but even that's different.
Firmino's such a magnanimous character anyway, isn't he? You know?
It is the Mo Salah show, and it should be, like, the end of last season was a bit of a blip. Like, that isn't the norm of Mo Salah. He was just knackered. We've seen Mo Salah, who's had a month off, sitting on the beach, got a new contract, got loads more money, got his ex died a little bit, and he's come back and he just looks like the best player in the world again.
The ball right footed. Yeah. And we won a pet off it. I mean, that's just class. Yeah. That's just, that never happens. Yeah. Like, it just doesn't ever happen, does it? And this is that's the type of performance that we needed to see from Mo Salah. And from a seniority point of view, he's been the main man since he walked through the door and banged his first 40-goal season. Yeah. And that's not up for debate. Like, but in terms of how the group interacts, that's different. You know, Jordan Henderson's in and out of the side, but he's still the captain. You know, when Sammy Hippie was at the football club, but not always in the side, he was the captain, you know what I mean? So leadership is different to being the main man on the team, and now Mo gets to be everything that he wants.
He was the best player on the pitch by a mile. Well, I say Thiago was called classy, but he's the best player on the pitch on a pitch full of world-class players.
Yeah.
And Mo Salah was the best because that's his level. His level is one of the best players on the planet. Virgil's in that mix as well, but like that's the standard of footy player we've got. And it was a nice little reminder of, yeah, it didn't go well last season. And there has been a little bit of, you know, before the contract, there was a little bit of, oh, if we just sell Mo Salah, we'll replace, like, you don't replace that.
I sort of forget that he gave Darwin Nunes that first penalty.
Yeah.
You know, earlier on in the pre-season to get him up and running in the absolute first place.
Absolutely. I wonder whether there's a little bit of Salah this season. And, I agree. Last summer, he has a summer off and he comes back the best player on the planet. And the legs fall off. Because
this summer, he has a winter off.
Exactly.
Summer, he doesn't have a winter
off. Yeah,
this winter, he has a World Cup off.
In Australia, he does. He's got a summer off and a winter break as well. And barring unforeseen circumstances, you're going to get a full season of being the best player on the planet. I wonder, and it's not a big enough sample range to determine this yet, but just from those early actions, whether we might see this as a season where, I mean, Salah already finished with the top assist last season. Whether you see it could be a 20 goal, 20 assist Salah season instead of like a 30 goal, 10 assist kind of thing.
See, I think it's going to score a lot of Premier League goals.
But what I mean is, and you're probably right, it could be a 40 goal and a 30, 20 goal assist, but more that thing of, you seeing it now where the dynamic of Liverpool changing, where he doesn't need to be, someone's going to come in to take that pressure off, who's going to win the game for Liverpool. He just might get to stat pad a bit by actually just going, I can run 30 more yards flat out, or I can just pass it to this lad and he's going to score and I'm still going to look amazing, because nobody ever got upset with Lionel Messi for getting loads of assists as well. Nobody thought he was a lesser player for adding assists. You know, people hold Thierry Henry seasons up against Salah seasons and all that because he got loads of assists as well as loads of goals. Interesting to see anyway.
I'll come back to Nunes very, very quickly. What I found interesting was how many times he was one-on-one with their goalie, or he was standing right in front of their goalie. We rarely get that. We usually get that from the wide. So if someone goes one-on-one for Liverpool, it's usually Mane or Salah, or it was. I rarely remember Bobby Firmino being one-on-one with many goalies, or Jota. Nunes, where he plays on the shoulder. It was funny, that one where Henderson just gave it to him. It was like the Red Sea had opened. It was just like, oh my God.
He tackled the defender, that's why.
There's a striker.
And the defender was out of position.
There's a striker. I'm just going to pass to him and let him go and score. We don't see that much.
I think there's two ways to use Nunes. And I think when you're playing low block, defend for the live teams, you're playing for the first 60 and you use them as a battering ram, and then you bring on your tricky little skillful tight spaces when they're tired. But when you're playing good teams, like we saw against City, you play your tricky skillful players, you run the defence ragged, and then you bring the battering ram on the end, who's just going to charge down the middle with all his pace and power. The fact that he can do it against Man City, if you can do it against City, you're going to be able to do it against anyone, aren't you? Chris, it mattered. No matter what anyone will tell you, you know, we've been joking, we'll still call it the big 50p, because that's what it is. It's not a major honour.
Even when you lifted the thing up and nearly hit it, the flap and nearly hit him on the edge.
It's just bad.
It's literally just an enlarged thing from a kid's football team.
It's got the same frame on it and
everything. Like, it's like, there's no need
what the
for that.
Like, send you home with for being good.
Yeah, I've got them on school pictures from Rudston in the 80s. That stupid flap, like, it's just ridiculous. Yeah. It's a pathetically big trophy. Yeah. And that's the only way to describe it.
Yeah, I like the fact that when we win it, we're like, well, it's a Super Cup, isn't it? Basically, we live for 50p. The flap needs to go.
You have to lift it like a fucking fence panel.
Yeah.
It's fucking stupid.
It's a two-man job, isn't it? Really, should have been. Yeah.
Costa Shivakash getting a photo of holding it
like a
shield.
What a guy! See, we didn't see that on the telly because the telly was the other view, so I didn't see that until the photos came out.
That's what it should have. It should be like Captain America's shield. It should have like two straps on the back, so you can put your arm through it, and then you hold it up like that. I'd get rid of the flap, put the strap. That's what we did.
Story of your life.
It mattered, and you know, obviously people always try to play it down, and we absolutely would be here if Liverpool lost that goal. Ah, who gives a shit? It's a glorified 100%. Friendly.
100%.
But you know,
we're not.
Just to play this down, like from Man City trying to play it down, like Bernardo Silva, 5 minutes after the ball went in the back of the net and the VAR decision happened, ran the fastest he possibly could and gave it the absolute bifters to their fans, like double fist pumps, going nuts for it. Pep Guardiola robbed Alvarez of his moments of celebrating his first ever goal because he was filling his head with like fucking mad little hand gestures and stuff. And their fans were getting got celebrated like fuck.
When they won it against us the other year, they ran like crazy, yeah. Didn't they? When they won it. Was it that year actually? They literally called it the quadruple.
Yeah, they called themselves formidables.
You know what I mean? So like, you're adding it in. We added our stuff in. We were champions of everything across different seasons. But so what? That's just what you do as a football fan.
Because you're still reigning champions of all those things.
You shoot it down and we lift it up, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'd much rather have won the game. I'd much rather have done it in the fashion that we did. And I'd much rather have watched all the Man City fans go home sad.
Answer to the players, Paul.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Like, Fabinho came out and said we beat the best team in England.
Manchester City players trying to get Virgil van Dijk booked when he kicks the ball away. They don't do that if it's a friendly because they're not asked. Like, yeah. It mattered to the players.
I adore the fact that they didn't claim their medals because, and there'll be loads of people out there that go, oh yeah, sign of real winners, that, nah. Sign of fucking bad losers, if you ask me. Like, you, and it's a very 80s, like I'm sure Graham Shearer's like, well, runners-up medals, it's only the winners' medals that count. And this is what I love, like, I'm saying this, and I think I said this on one of the post-match shows, someone might be able to put me right on this. I don't think Jürgen Klopp would allow us to not claim our medals because I think his attitude would be you only get so many opportunities in your football career to be in a position where you can be given a medal, whether it's a winner or a loser's one. So go and get it because you've actually earned the right to claim that medal.
When they beat us, he made Liverpool watch them lift the trophy up.
Yeah, and they did the same. And City did the same. City stood there and watched Liverpool lift it.
But they had the medals on when they done it. Or Liverpool did get the medals that day. So yeah, I didn't like it. I thought it was petulant. Like, we'll get it in the dressing room. Like,
can I give you my honest opinion? I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
As long as it's not Liverpool doing it.
Yeah.
Whatever other team does is irrelevant. Yeah, irrelevant to me. I want to see Liverpool go and collect their medals, and I want to see them take them off and be disappointed.
Yeah, it's relevant to me because
be magnanimous in defeat.
Exactly, because City's psychology is important to me. You know, about what they're doing and how they're doing things, and it's just one of those mad little moments where they've made the decision there. And I think if you have to make a decision, it shows that it matters to you more than you're trying to show that it doesn't matter. You're showing how much it does matter.
You go and get your winner's medal. So you're pissed off that you didn't get a winner's medal. Yeah. And and that fella was probably on an hourly rate, so he probably got half the wages.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, right,
in a cost of living crisis, Paul, that's really, really shitty.
Absolutely.
I was thinking, with City, I always find, like, and I might be reading this completely wrong, I always feel
that
like...
That was Ian Rush, by the way.
Yeah. He's not sure if you could
someone be there. He came all the way, didn't even get a hug off all his own players, like,
because they didn't know who he was.
Yeah, true.
No idea.
Should have got Sean Gouta.
He's the last proper City legend. I was thinking, I always feel about City like they are mentally a little bit fragile. Like, I always feel like, and again, I'm not a City fan, I'm not a player, so I might be wrong. I always feel like they always think the attention's on someone else and not them, and they're like, well, give us the attention, and no one's really asked.
But when we give them the attention, they go, don't look at our finances.
Don't look at that kind of attention.
It's like putting a claim into HMRC and then they come back and want to do a full order. They're like, yeah, they're going to do it. I didn't want to see that bit. I'm claiming on this bit. Don't worry about that bit over there. But yeah, I do think that, like, didn't Simon Brundage call him like, something disparaging. I mean, he basically called them weak, didn't he? Mentally fragile. Like, and I do get the sense of that. Like, they're winners, and I don't mean mentally fragile on the pitch because they respond to adversity sometimes quite well.
Yeah.
I mean, when it's like, if it isn't all heaping praise on them, or if someone else does well, like Bernardo Silva not clapping the Guard of Honour, that's just a prick move. Yeah. And it was a while ago now, and I'd be fuming if a Liverpool player did that, because being magnanimous in defeat, like, they beat you. Well done, news. That's what it should be. I sometimes get a sense of like that they don't like it up them, for lack of a better phrase. Like, they're not the
one for me. I said this to Chloe during the game. I enjoy nothing more than seeing little Kev the Red, Kev De Bruyne's slumped shoulders when it's not going his way, and he just gets dead petulant. And you can imagine, because obviously quite a distance away and we're quite noisy, so you can't really hear what he's saying, but his squeaky little miserable voice kicking off when people isn't going his way. I love it. And that's the perfect example of that. Like, we've seen Pep loses his head all the time and things. Kev De Bruyne, when a game's not going his way, his head goes
but
then, as well.
And this is the thing with them in general, and it's kind of always been the same with Guardiola sides. They think that they can walk over opposition, and they don't like it when they don't, because they're affronted by different styles of football to their own, and never appreciate and respect that other ways can win in one-off games of football. Like, they're the best coach side in world football, Manchester City. I have no doubt. We've got better players, but their system and their manager make them a better team over the course of a season, four times out of the last five.
Yeah.
That's the God's honest truth. But I think that annoys the players as well. I think that's what does their head in, because everyone talks about Trent Alexander-Arnold being the best right-back, Andy Robertson being the best left-back, Virgil van Dijk being the best. And this is no slight on Jurgen Klopp,
and they're not
because
being
he's
loved
built
while
these players
it.
Up to be the best.
Yeah.
But I just think that City's system takes the credit and Guardiola takes the credit, and that pisses them lads off because they're incredible footballers in their own right. But they are lifted up by their manager and they don't feel the praise. It's all Guardiola's this. Guardiola's the best manager ever. But Guardiola can do it with any player and he can make you better. And as a player, that must be fucking frustrating.
Yeah.
Because you like, I am one of the best players in world football, and yet you all talk about them all the time.
And
everyone loves them because
then
they're really nice people. And stuff as well.
Yeah, it's true. And then you turn up at the end of the season to celebrate your wins, and know what no one else does.
Yeah,
you know, and you're looking at all these other things, and you know, to the point they win the Premier League, and Liverpool get, you know what, 10 times the turnout for the two domestic trophies and that kind of stuff.
We got 100,000 for every handle.
You look at Roma, like, more people turned out to greet Paolo Dybala signing than turned up to celebrate Man City winning. The league title, you know what I mean? They're the kind of things, and you're right, yeah, it's a bit of a mess, and I love it. The Sunday game is a bit anticlimactic. I mean, when that team come out, there was a bit of a moment of like, what have we all come here for? I thought it was a bit, we were joking, a few of us were saying like, I'm sure it was marketed on, like, with like Nunes as the face of it when it was being marketed.
Thiago was the tweet, wasn't he? I feel sorry for them because Kurt Jones was meant to play and he's in that booth thing. Naby wasn't well. Jota's injured. Kelleher's injured.
Ox is injured.
So it would have been more of a reserve squad than a kid's squad. Liverpool can't plan that.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Can't just turn up for a friendly.
Yeah.
This was in the books a long time ago. The plan would have been to give 11 plus a couple of subs the game on the Saturday, and then everyone else who didn't play on the Sunday.
I wondered if it's the reason why Elliot and Carvalho, because like Elliot gets a decent amount of minutes.
Miller plays 90, doesn't he, as well?
Yeah.
I think he wanted everyone to have 90 minutes in their legs. Yeah. But like I say, it would have been Jones and Naby in midfield. Milner might have done a job at left back or what, you know what I mean? And That's where it went wrong.
Well, you're right. Shimikas probably
was
started.
He was injured as well. Yeah.
So theoretically, it would have been Kelleher, Kostas, Gomez, Konate. Then you look at it, either Milner at right back or
maybe
Calvin Ramsey. Or, you know, could have been at right back for that one. Then, yeah, I mean, like Fabinho played the Osasuna game last season because he was just coming back. He was a late return, but it would have been Bajetic again in that with
or Milner
with potentially one of two from
Jones, Naby, Ox
in there. Jota up front, Harvey and Carvalho either side.
We'll probably pick that team in the league.
Okay, well, there we go. I'll make me peace with that then.
That's what it was. I just that the injuries and the fitness issues just threw it into a bit of disarray. And then it's a bad time they get there. Our senior players over the, obviously we've got two centre halves and Milner, and then Harvey Elliott is a senior player in the team. Fabio Carvalho, who's just turned up as a kid, is now a senior member of the team. It was just that, yeah, it was. And it was a kid's team for against a good outfit, and that's why.
Well, as I was told whilst being sung at and then eventually carried away by them, the Strasbourg fans informed me that it was their team, basically, that they played. You know, it wasn't like a reserve
side. 50 people had a very good time. They really enjoyed themselves.
They outsung the entirety of Anfield for the vast majority of the game. Fair play to them. Just one note as well, that there was the club invited people who took children with them to the Paris Champions League final to come along as guests of the club, and they all got like a goodie bag of stuff.
Jamie Webster.
Yeah, you got a Jamie Webster concerts and all that kind of stuff, which I just thought was a lovely touch, because the scars of that are going to, you know, run deep. I still felt really uncomfortable going to the Man United game, but it was different because you're abroad, and I was impressed. Going to Community Shield, I felt really uncomfortable going back into a football ground again and just being in amongst the crowds in the concourse and stuff. And I'm a nearly 40-year-old man, been going to footy for a long time. I think that's an important thing that Liverpool have done there. You know, hopefully that memory for those kids is almost overwrites. like overwrites, you know, or patches up the memory of the Champions League final a little bit.
It's a brilliant thing. What, even just, you know, the kids go free and all that type of stuff. I mean, you know, me and the wife took the two kids. It was £54, which is basically the price of a ticket for the four of us to go to a game of footy. Yeah. Like, and they won't remember who plays. They'll remember going to Anfield. Like, I will remember going to Anfield for the first time.
Is that because you didn't know the players were and you couldn't?
Well, no, I'll tell the story, actually, because I've told you both, and I have done it on the final way, but it's brilliant nonetheless. So we're there, and they obviously know the numbers of the players, like your Jotters and Firminos and Van Dijk's. You've got the numbers in the songs. Now, Lyra's 5 and Robin's 8, and Robin's been to 3 games. Lyra's, it was her first game in Anfield, so it was wicked. But they do your head in at the same time. It's fantastic, because I'll remember the photographs and not this story and everything that goes around it of being a dad at the match with two little ones. So they're there and she's talking and she's going, "Who's that number 88 on change? Who's that Mabaya? Who's that who's that black one in the middle, daddy?" Oh my goodness, Lyric. And I look at Kat and my wife and she "Can you just explain? The one with the whistle." "Oh, it's the ref." "It's the fucking ref."
"Oh my God, Lyra, Jesus.
Don't do that to me again." Like, you know what I mean?
TV's Chris Page, I caught him in ring
stall in main stand. Honestly, I was just like, and thank, like, because I realised they don't wear black in the
Prem,
do they? Is it blue they wear on the top or something? Like, so I'd not really noticed the referee anyway, plus it's a friendly, so you don't. And then there was another line, I don't think I've told you this one, that she said. She's like, "I hate the ball, daddy." "What?" "I hate the ball. It's just rolling around everywhere, isn't it?" But yeah, babe.
The lazy thing doesn't even move under its own locomotion.
But then she elaborates, she went, "Keeps going in our net." I'm like, yeah, naughty ball, babe.
yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, it's true. It was a bit of a shame. I did feel a bit sorry in that regard, because it would have been nice to have a couple more headline names just for the experience of it all. And of course, it then dampened the chances of Liverpool being able to win. I thought it sounds stupid to say in the game they lost 3-0, but they were actually largely the better team, I thought, except that in those decisive moments,
the big mistakes were followed by good play by Strasbourg as well. They were absolutely punished, which is what happens when you get play men's v boys. You can be great between the penalty areas, but if you're not great in either penalty area, you ain't gonna win the game.
All three goals were pretty shoddy, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, it was just like Harvey Davies, his all round play was sound, but it just comes a time when there's just senior, good quality footballers kicking it dead hard into the court, you know what I mean? Like, it was what it was. Fabio and Harvey, just briefly, I just think are going to be absolute stars. I thought it was Harvey Elliott again. I spoke to John Bradley about this on the fan cam, about it reminding me of him at Villa Park in the League Cup, Chris, where that last 15 minutes,
the one that missed,
What?
The last 15 minutes that I missed.
Oh, right.
Because I took two kids to the match.
But he's geeing the crowd up, and he's asking for the ball constantly. He doesn't want to lose three.
I saw him geeing the crowd up when he's going to the for a corner and stuff like that, isn't he? We talk about the scouser in our team for Trent Alexander-Arnold. I think Harvey Elliott actually epitomises that song more without actually being a scouser, because he feels and acts, I believe, like a fan does.
Yeah.
I think Trent's cool. He's a cool customer. He loves the club. He loves the players. He loves the fans. Harvey Elliott can't keep it under control. It bubbles out.
Flares up a
it bubbles out stuff. All the time. And some people are like that. And so that, for me, like, it's a really good connection for A, people who aren't from Liverpool and love Liverpool Football Club, but also B, from people who are at Liverpool and see how much it means to people. I think he's fantastic.
He's a wonderful person. And I know he had like that, without dragging it back up again, but he had that unfortunate moment when he just signed and there was like an Instagram video of him saying something a bit naughty or whatever, but he's a kid. But I see him, and it's so unprompted, some of the stuff he does, because I find you can tell when people are putting it on. I think, broadly speaking, you can see through people like that. I think a lot of the time it's the stuff that he does, and you don't know, he doesn't do it for the cameras. You watch him. So there was a couple of moments in that game. There's one where a Frauendorf, I think it is, gets his boots stuck in the advertising hoarding behind
and he's trying to take a quick corner.
And he's about to hit the quick corner, and he thinks he's hurt, or he thinks he goes straight back over. He comes out and he goes, right, kind of cool. His first instinct is, check me, mate, all right. That's the first thing. One of their lads goes down with cramp, and he's immediately on him. Just doesn't, like, not make a big deal of it, just goes over him and just helps him. You know, he's going over and giving a shirt out to fans at the end. Charity Shield, the kid runs on the pitch and like gets grabbed by security.
And he carries him back in,
and he gets him, picks him up, and takes him back over to his dad. And again, if you're a super cynic, you might go, well, it's all for it. I genuinely, like, I've seen him. He's always the one when there's mixed zones and there's professional footballers, can't be arsed. He'll go and he'll give all the time, you know, all the time to people. I think he's a great player. He's
a good egg.
He's an inspirational young man as well. We want to crack on, but I thought, yeah, Fabio Carvalho, for a lad who's just come in. I've seen him now play left of the midfield three. I've seen him play on the left, and I've seen him play as the false nine. And I made the point with Neil Jones on Journal Insight last week. I think we've signed him as our Foden. Not that he's going to be the same type of player as Phil Foden necessarily, but he feels like a very Manchester City signing.
A jack of all trades.
Exactly. You can see him coming in, and he can give you so much tactical flexibility potentially in the next this season, seasons after, and so on and so forth.
Yep.
Very, very good player indeed. Right, we're going to take a short break again. We're going to be doing season predictions when we return. We'll see you all in a sec.
Hey guys, the new season is upon us, and over on redmenplus.com we've got you covered in every single way. We've got the Final Word show, we've got Journo Insight with Neil Jones, we've got Opposition Previews, we've got the Stat Show with Chris Pajak, we've got the Club Legend show, and tons, tons more. All of this content is available in video and podcast forms. So if you want even more amazing Liverpool content in your lives, head on over to redmenplus.com and sign up from as little as £5 a month. I promise you won't regret it. The content's amazing. You're going to have a ball. So go head on over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Wonderful stuff. Get involved. If you haven't already checked out Redmen Plus, we've got so much stuff coming up. There's a couple of massive, massive interviews that we have been promised in the next week or two. I don't want to reveal them, but yeah, very much stay tuned on all that stuff. And there's brilliant stuff each and every week as we kick off into the new season.
It's Jordan Henderson because I give him a 9.
It's Adjin because you give him a 7.
He's the light with a 7.
We had some comments and stuff in the first half of the show, which we haven't gone through yet, but Karim El Amadi, who's been a member for 13 months as a cult hero here on YouTube, says, hello, Redmen. Why in WA. Hello, Karim. Good to see/hear from you. Halkal Iskander has joined as a first team member as well. That's brilliant. Imi Imran Adam has messaged us as well with a £20 super.
Wow, I think thank you.
Anyway, super chat regardless. He says, hey guys, just want to say I missed the City game because I was representing the Reds in the ring in the first ever cerebral palsy wheelchair boxing fight as Imi the Cop King Adam.
Oh yes, that's a name. Yes,
got to walk out to YNWA as well. That is absolutely sensational, mate. Brilliant.
I hope you knock that guy out.
Absolutely brilliant. And Leon Geary with €5 says, love this podcast every week. Keep up the good work, fellas. People don't have a clue writing us off a game with their season predictions. Clowns. Yeah, good. I'm just let people do it. People are just weird. I think a lot of this comes from, so I did the last fan standing show yesterday and we were doing our top 10 predictions and I had to say, because we were saying, well, why have you put West Ham so low and why have you done this? I said, ultimately because I don't really care about any of the teams who are going to finish
below second,
pretty much like below third certainly, like and so, and I've got a couple of narratives where I do care, so I've kind of put them to the forefront. But that's the thing, is you're finding these people doing their season predictions. They are so, they try to be pundits and, oh, I know football because I play football. They're all biased to one football club or another to some extent, maybe one or two or more. So, and that's why you end up with Liverpool finishing lower down, because like Tottenham fans are all made up with being Tottenham Hotspur for some reason for the moment. So they're going to get excited and get ahead of themselves. City fans are going to do exactly the same. And then it happens all over the place. So, and ultimately, people don't want Liverpool to be successful if some of them have got a big bias against us because of the whole, they love a club and all that kind of shit. It's like why Gary Neville, I'm doing the overlap as well. I'm fascinated to see what he's going to be coming up with, if he's going to find a way to play Liverpool down.
Mane's a big loss.
Yeah, it'll be guaranteed. And like, something's not right. Something doesn't smell right at Liverpool right now. It's like, yeah.
That's your arsehole being too close to your nose, mate.
Like, miles off it, mate. You do that, you get lost in it sometimes. You're so focused on your own thing. So let them continue to get it wrong. Liverpool are probably going to be absolutely brilliant this season. But let's do all the things that I've just said and let's get ourselves in trouble by saying other clubs are going to be shitter than whatever. First and foremost, Liverpool need a fast, strong start in August, don't they, Steve? That this first month, it's not going to be defining because there's lots of twists and turns to come, of course, but if Liverpool can come out of August with maximum points, it wouldn't shock me if they were already cleared at the top of the league.
Yeah, and I think the fixture list has been relatively kind. So these are the ones that you need to go and win. Almost your banker fixtures, you know, obviously United's going to be a different kettle of fish, but regardless, we're still better than them. Yeah, the thing is, Paul, like you say, they need a fast August, then they need a fast September, October.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so the pace is just relentless. It's non-stop now. It's 100, it's a marathon run at the pace of 100 metres. Like, it's relentless.
Yeah.
It is just relentless. So City will be thinking the exact same. They'll be thinking, like, you know, we got it.
Relentless?
We got 8 points. They had 14 points on us, didn't they? But it was technically eight.
Yeah.
And even that wasn't enough. Like, there's no gap I'm comfortable with until it's like January and it's 20 or something. Like, even if we were 12 points ahead of them in January, I wouldn't be thinking it's game over.
I think they're being conditioned to win the Champions League this season. Because Haaland suggests
that might be the case.
Because of how they've approached it. I think Liverpool have conditioned themselves in pre-season to be able to go flat out for the first half of the season and see where they lie, and then trust that they can fix anything in the winter break if needs be. I think Man City are trying to pace themselves, so they've got something left in the tank come the end of the season.
Because they ran out last season in Europe, it makes sense. And their quality will get them through the start of the season. They might not be as good. I'm with you. I think they're trying to finish stronger. Like last season, they raced out to the lead, didn't they? After we had that little blip, and before I know it, it was that 14, whatever it was, points.
We spent the first half of the season trying to get Virgil van Dijk and Joel Matip back up to speed, and all the things that came with that, you know, that getting the high line back working and all that kind of thing, whereas City didn't have to worry about that in the same way. And by the time we got ourselves right, and obviously with COVID and all that kind of stuff kicking us in the balls at the very wrong times of the season. Going to be very interesting. Right, we'll
come thing to is, like, sorry, mate. Liverpool have proven that they can chase and lead. Man City haven't proven they can chase. Yeah. For me, and that's where the mentality comes in that you were talking about in the earlier part of the show. If Liverpool get a lead on City, I think early doors, I think we walk the league this season, and that's what I'm hoping for. Obviously, but I'm thinking a 10 point plus win for the league by Liverpool.
I agree. I agree with that too. But yeah, we'll come on to that later on. Top seven predictions then. Do we think Steven Gerrard, Aston Villa, can make the leap into European places this season?
No. I think there's too many good teams above them. I don't think that good, to be honest with you. I thought they were pretty average when we saw them. They're a decent-ish side, but they're a mid-table-ish side. Again, there's transfers to be done and stuff, but no, I don't see. I can name a few that I think are above them.
Go on.
Well, in order of Liverpool, City, Tottenham, Chelsea, United, West Ham are definitely, they're all definites. I wouldn't be shocked at Newcastle. I wouldn't, I think.
So you think Newcastle, I mean, Newcastle finished 11th last season, Villa finished 14th.
I think Newcastle, yeah.
But there's 4 points between the two
teams. Yeah, I think Newcastle are better than them. I liked how Newcastle ended the season. I don't know what Leicester are, to be honest. They're just an enigma.
They're the big question. My sneaky feeling is Leicester are done.
They might be, because there's talk of the goalies leaving.
Is Maddison gone yet?
Is Newcastle trying to get him?
That's 50 million.
Potentially, yeah. Fofana's linked with Chelsea. Thielmann's, who knows with us. So yeah, Leicester, they're the ones. But I'm not sure Villa are like better than Brighton. I think they're like around that level.
Yeah. Anywhere between 8th and 12th.
For Villa.
It's a coin flip between those places normally in the league, isn't it? How many cover it last season?
Well, 8th and 12th is 4 points between 8th and 12th. So 52, so down to 48 from
Good luck
Leicester
predicting
down to
those
Palace.
Four sides.
It's
the same every year. Yeah. A couple of wins at the back end of the season, you can be 13th and come 8th.
It's like a Leicester, Newcastle, Wolves, Villa,
Palace might be better this season.
Yeah, they're in that mix of they'll probably finish anywhere between, yeah, like 8th, 9th and 14th.
Who's finishing 5th, 6th and 7th this season? Europa and Conference League places.
Arsenal, Manchester United,
yeah.
West Ham.
I'm not sure about West Ham. I agree with the other two. I think that I find it's just a really difficult job to do what Moyes has done. I know he did it at Everton and was almost best of the rest when it was a top four. But at some point that steam sort of runs out of the engine and you just can't, he can't get higher than what he got higher than last year. So therefore he's either going to finish exactly the same or he's going to go lower, and the chances are he goes lower.
They fell foul of my unintentional disrespect when I was doing my top 10, because I was so focused on the narratives of other teams, I ended up almost forgetting about how good West Ham were last season. Let's hope they start the season really strong because they got City first game. But like, yeah, you're right, I agree with that. I don't see that there's a world where
he's just gonna harden to nothing. Like, and if he does the same, the West Ham fans are going to want to have kicked
on. Who's catching them? I don't see that's the problem.
Maybe Newcastle.
Well, in terms of how the league finished, they finished 7th last season. There's a 4 point gap down to Leicester, another point down then to Brighton. You've got Wolves, Newcastle, Palace, Brentford, Villa, the teams to finish, you know, blowing. And I think we'd all be realistically saying our aim this season is 7th. You know, a lot of them, maybe not Brentford.
Have West Ham got European football again?
They'll have Conference League.
See, that might, yeah, you know, it could go either way. No, they did, but it could go either way.
They have made some signs and stuff. I think they're a good team.
They're probably the favourites to finish there.
Yeah.
But whether they do or not, for me, is again a coin flip.
It's that I think, I don't know whether you agree, I think Spurs are going to finish there this season.
It depends what Chelsea do. Chelsea,
yeah.
And it's a significant gap still. And
we did the Chelsea chat, didn't we? Was that even the last time I was on the podcast? And I was saying to you, I think Chelsea it's going under the radar that they're in a bit of a mess. If Tuchel can keep them together for one season, then they'll stay. And keeping the top four, they might be able to ride this out. But you look at what a shit show Chelsea is at the moment.
But they are now, they look like they're getting the signings that other teams wanted, and that's the Chelsea MO almost. Like, rather than going to get someone who might not be available, they've just sniffed out who is available and just tried to gazump. So Cucurella looks like he's going to Chelsea. Frankie de Jong might end up at Chelsea. So they're still going to have good players, and I think they've got a good manager. I think,
but the season starts this weekend, and they haven't bought those players.
No, you're right. But then they have got Raheem Sterling and Koulibaly, who are both great players. I think it's going to be close. I wouldn't bank either on them. I think
Koulibaly play all three positions simultaneously in a back three because he's good. Like
Aspilicueta and Thiago. I think those two will finish third and fourth. I'm just not convinced on the order. I think it'll be close. I'd probably give the edge to Tottenham, probably because I think they've got a better manager, but. I think the demise of Chelsea has been overplayed a little bit, and I think the how great Spurs are all of a sudden is a little bit overplayed as well. I think they're very, very close. They're just doing it in a different way.
I don't know. It's interesting, it's impossible to judge. Chelsea is the kind of point on this is that they've got no structure.
They never have
above the manager. No, but they have. They've had Granitskaya doing the deal, deals. They've had Petr Cech for years. They've been well. Their transfer business has been great for years. They've been very good in that, and that has completely evaporated this summer. To your point, they're targeting players who they know are interested in transfers, and as you put it on in the WhatsApp group, it's like not having the bottle to try and cop off with a girl until you see she's the kind of girl who would cop off with someone, and then you go for that. You know, that's kind of where they're at.
17 or stay horse MO.
my question, I guess, Chris, is who's the biggest shit show between of the teams that are the finish between third and sort of sixth last season? That's Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, United.
Man U, the biggest shit show. Yeah, they are. I mean, their best business is getting rid of dog shit players that they've thought were boss. That's their best business this summer. You know, they've lost Pogba, they've lost Cavani, who was never really terrible for them, to be fair. They've lost Juan Mata, they've lost Matic. You know, they've still Lingard. They've not sorted out the gaping hole in midfield yet. And it might still happen. It feels like everything that they wanted to do, which was build for the future with a director of football and plan for without the manager, has gone out the window as soon as Ten Hag walked through the door and gone, no, I don't like any of your players. I'm just going to buy the Ajax ones if that's okay. Which is good if he's the right man. It's really, really bad if he's not.
Yeah.
It's put them back another 4 years. That's the problem. They're banking on him being a world-class manager, and he might be.
Christian Eriksen's a good signing.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay, sound. Where does he play?
In Pogba's position, I would suggest.
Okay, right. I think his best position is where Bruno Fernandes plays, who just happens to be their best player.
Yeah.
And therefore, I don't understand the signing personally.
Yeah.
Bit depth, maybe. I think United are very talented. I think Ten Hag is a good manager, a good coach. But I'm with you. What they've done is they've done what Man United always do. They've gone back to the success they had in the past. Came when they had a man who was in charge of everything and was the messiah. And because that's what's worked ever for them. That's what they keep trying to do. And he has got too much power. He's wandered in, and he's just if he's crap, like dog shit crap manager. They're knackered.
Can I tell you the thing that makes me laugh most, and not in the memey way that everyone's doing this, but like the Lisandro Martinez thing screams, I don't understand the Premier League to me. Because even if he's the greatest ball playing centre half on planet Earth, you're gonna lose goals from set pieces, and because they're not good enough to dominate football teams yet, because they've still got to go through the process. They've got to be a good counter attacking team before they can be a good possession team, and so on and so forth. They're gonna end up losing and drawing a bunch of random games, and they might touch lucky only in so much as there's far less like dogged teams in the Premier League this season, probably less than there's ever been. So they might touch lucky in that regard. And it feels like oversimplification of analysis. But there's a reason why Liverpool buy 6'5" centre halves.
Yeah, there's a reason why Liverpool and you know City are so good at defending and scoring from set pieces, and the same with Chelsea. Now these teams these can be difference makers when you're playing a team that you're rivaling in the league as well. Never mind that the other teams further down the table, it can often be the difference between a Liverpool and a Manchester City game or something, can't it? So
and
it's going to be a struggle for them. And we've not even mentioned the fucking shit show around Ronaldo, by the way.
I was about to say,
walking out of the game after being subbed at half time or whatever. I mean, they haven't got a striker. if he's not there? Well, which is a big concern for them, because Marcus Rashford is not a striker.
Well, they're bigging up Anthony Martial.
You've missed the return of Anthony Martial.
I know, I blocked that name a while ago. No, I'm kidding. He's relevant. He doesn't score goals.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and that's one of the things. How often does a guy who's faded and faded and faded and goes out on loan? Maybe I have no idea actually whether he had a good season at Sevilla or not, but how often does that work? Well, he's not a kid. He's just senior footballer for them. Does he come back and all of a sudden, oh, now he's good enough to play for Manchester United? He might be, because I've always thought he was a talented footballer. But that feels like a lot. That feels like, remember when we sent Draco Malfoy out on, or Lucius Malfoy out on loan? What was his name? Voronin.
Yes.
Andrew Voronin out on loan, and he had a really good season, like Toulouse or whatever. And we went, oh, well, great, brilliant. And no, he was just as shite as when we loaned him out. It's just that he'd gone and played at a lower level and looked a little bit better. Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. I think they are quantifiably still in the shit. The fact that, like, the Frenkie de Jong stuff is fascinating, because I think they're baffled by him. Because
he's like, they're like the handsome Muslim fella at the bar who can't get his head around why this girl doesn't want to go home with him.
Yeah, exactly.
He's gassed on, off Beauty and the Beast, and he doesn't understand why Belle isn't coming over. But like, he's like, I've got muscles, I can sing, I've got every girl wants me, why don't you want to come here? Because you're a fucking idiot.
No, exactly. And because they're so used to going, oh, okay, well, you don't want to play for us because we're not offering you what you want. How's about this then? And they just write money on a piece of paper, and they go, okay, what are you talking about? And they go, loads of money. And they go, okay, now you're talking my language. And he's gone, no, because I'm dead good and you're shit. And they go, well, Barcelona, and they go, well, we want you to play for half the money. And they're like, I would rather play for no money for Barcelona.
He just wants his money that he's owed. That's all he wants. He just wants his millions and millions that he's owed by Barcelona.
Chelsea are boxing him off. I think, to go back to it, I think United finished fifth, Arsenal finished sixth. I think, again, I like the Arsenal project, and I think they're going about it the wrong way. Sorry, I think they're going about it the right way. They're doing what they had to do, but I just don't think they've got enough good players yet.
I think Arsenal, because we always talk about this, about like the least shit of the teams is the one who finishes fourth, and that's what it is for me. I think Spurs have got a boss manager, they've got loads of goals, and they've got a manager who organises the defence. There's no reason why Tottenham won't improve again this season. They'll definitely finish in the top four, and they should finish third, because I think they're on the way of the. They're just so well settled. Chelsea could collapse, and if Chelsea collapse, Arsenal need to be the team ready to capitalise on it. And if they don't do it this season, they'll never do it under Arteta. But they look good. The fans are back. The fans are on side. He's established. Jesus looks like he's been reborn, because he's not being told to go
second coming.
The right wing. Yes. And they've got Saka's obviously boss, and Martinelli's boss, and they've got a couple of issues in midfield.
And in defence, that's where my issue with them is.
Yeah.
The goalie's rubbish.
Rightfully so.
And the centre-halves aren't great. No.
Yeah. They're Arsenal. They can't defend. It's fine. We'll move on. But they're 2 years away from being really, really good, Arsenal. They are moving in the right direction. But Tottenham are better than them right now, with a better manager. I can't make a decision between Chelsea and Tottenham, because Chelsea are one of those football clubs, like a mushroom that grows in shit. You know what I mean? Chelsea just do well with the chaos around them. They've always done well with changes of managers and all that. It's just part and parcel of being a Chelsea football club. The club that's in the better position is certainly Tottenham.
Yeah.
Whether that translates to them finishing third or not, I can't decide. But I can decide that Arsenal are next best, and then for me, Manchester United afterwards.
Yeah, I agree. But of course, the whole United thing could actually be like the solid basis. But this is the thing, it should never be underestimated. Stability plays a massive part in Premier League seasons, and that's why nobody's gonna finish ahead of Liverpool. Nobody's gonna finish ahead of both Liverpool and Man City, but maybe one of them has a mad disaster.
I'm not
season.
Even sure anyone closes the gap.
Yeah,
to be perfectly honest with you, yeah. If the most improved side in the top seven for me is Tottenham. Yeah. Whether that's enough to translate into third or massively closing the gap to City and Liverpool. If you were to say he gets to 90 points, the hardest 10 points to win are between 80 and 90.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you've just got to be so consistent for so long. I think teams can get into the 70s, no problem. I'm not sure they can get into the 80s yet.
Yeah, I think when you look on it, Spurs finished fourth on 71 points, 21 points behind Liverpool in second place. It's just not going to happen. You know, again, it would take, you need to have a perfect season and who you're chasing to absolutely combust.
The Ole Solskjaer Man United season when they finished second, that's what you need that
point. When was the last time somebody else got into the 80s?
That's a great question. I honestly don't know the answer.
It doesn't happen often, does it? Yeah, you're right. I think that one and two, because in City, I've got no idea the order. It's going to be in April, and it's going to be neck and neck, and it's going to be the same again. We should just fast forward to April, really, and just be there 1 point behind them, or they're 1 point behind us, and just crack on in that game. But I think Spurs are good, but let's say. What, are you expecting to jump 20 points better?
It's not going
to
happen. They should be looking to get towards high 70s. And if you get high 70s, you're third. You know, if you get 78 points in this league, you probably finish third.
And then you go again.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's
so. What did Chelsea finish on? 74.
Yeah, I've just tried 71. To go back to the league title. So
yeah, you know what? If it was that close, I can see Tottenham overtaking them.
I think
Tottenham are 3 points better and Chelsea are 3 points worse over the from what I've seen.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm gonna go there.
Okay, who's getting relegated?
Man City, Tottenham, Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester United, West Ham is the safe bet. I'll go West Ham.
Yeah, agreed. Disagreed.
I can't pick the top two. I really can't.
I think we're gonna win the league this season.
I will go Chelsea, Tottenham. I think.
You started in third there, haven't you?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Liverpool, Manchester City. Let's go. Oh, I'm close. I'm going to trust Tottenham, I think. Now I've changed my mind. Tottenham, Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal, West Ham. I believe more in talent sometimes. I think Man United got better players than Arsenal. And I think they've got a decent manager. I think
Have they?
Yeah. I don't think Arsenal got that many good players. Great players. Okay. I think they've got...
Yeah, they've really got world-class players, Arsenal, yeah.
Not one. Partey's close, maybe. He's got lots going on in his life, so fuck knows what happens there. Saka, Jesus is good. Like, they're good players, but Man United have got, like, Sancho and Varane.
And you know what? Actually, I'd forgotten Jadon Sancho.
Fucking
existed,
Ronaldo. Yeah. They've got
he should be able to get a tune out of him. Yeah, my feeling is... I'm going to put my balls on the line on the predictions. I think Arsenal finish fourth ahead of Chelsea. I think Chelsea will.
Oof,
I think Chelsea will implode.
If it was any other club,
because Tuchel looks like the kind of guy who won't take it quietly. He's the kind of guy who will blow his lid on the whole thing. And it's
Willie Villa-Boas. Was that his name, Andrew Villa-Boas?
Yeah,
no one's ever said the two names without the first name for him, have they?
No, yeah. Who's that? What's his first name's Villa? I think it'll be Liverpool, City, Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea, and which of Chelsea and Man United managed to get their act together in the season?
Yeah, fair enough.
And then I add Villa seventh as an absolute wild outside shout because my logic was
your undying love for Steven Gerrard.
Steven Gerrard is going to be Liverpool manager down the line. He's got to get Villa into European football. It might be a season too soon for it. We might be talking about next season before he does it. But fuck it, why not? Okay,
I'm not sure he is anymore.
I know, but I'm saying if in the multiverse, I'm sitting here as Doctor Strange looking into all possible futures and all the futures where Gerrard ends up as Liverpool manager, he has to get some sort of European run with Aston Villa to make it happen. Okay, right, Sam, we're going to be doing podcast extra.
Can I just very, very quickly, if you want more prediction stuff around the league on Redmen Plus, Chloe and Ross are going to go through everything, relegation battles, basically predicting the whole league table. So, and if it's
good luck with that.
Yeah, if you're a legend, get in the Discord now. Maybe type your table at 1-20. If anyone gets it right, by the way, I'll give you a prize.
Yeah,
cool. I the way you phrased it, I wasn't going to give you a sound.
I don't know what that'll be, and you will have to remember that I've said this, and you'll and you'll need proof, like you can't, an unedited post on Discord or something. I'll fox you off. Okay. If you get all 20 in the right positions, yeah, I'll sort it out.
Yeah. also put it on, put some sort of bet on it as well, and you'll get a proper price.
Mine's free. It's no risk.
Put a quid on it. No, I'm just, you know what I mean? Put 50p on it, you'll get a bigger prize than Steve's going to be able to give you. But regardless, Podcast Extra, we're going to be having a little bit of a chat about the England winning the Euros, Jürgen Klopp making one of our team members cry, and answering some of the more weird and wonderful questions from our club legends and from Twitter as well. So make sure you head over to Redmen Plus, redmenplus.com, get that in video and in podcast
and
form.
In your throat, apparently. Stuck in your throat.
Right, Sal, hope to see you over there. Other than that, have a wonderful, wonderful week. Build up show to follow on YouTube as Liverpool count down to the beginning of the Premier League season.
Bad, baby.
Exciting. Right, see you all soon. Ta-da.
Thank you for tuning in. If you want more Redmen TV content in your life, head over to redmenplus.com and sign up now. You can get access to a whole host of other content, including interviews, documentaries, pre- and post-match content. As well, if you join as a club legend, you will also get perks such as free merch, discount on merch, tickets to live shows, and much, much more. Head over to Redmen Plus now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.